Blog Talk Radio.
Well, that's how it sounds here this morning in the Frat House Sports Garage. Hey, good morning, all. Welcome into another Frat House Sports' Race Trim Motorsports Hour. Frat House, my company here from the Frat House Sports Garage on a absolutely glorious April. April 8th. It's April 9th already. Honest to God, I can't believe we're already heading to week 7 of the NASCAR season. It has just absolutely flown by, really, in many respects. We're going to be here for the next 90 minutes or so. We're going to sit around. We're going to, well, as we always do, we'll put our feet up on the oil cans here. We'll chit-chat about what happened last week in Martinsville in race number 6, and we'll look ahead to what we might be able to expect here, one of the earlier scheduled races on the calendar this year. We got a start time here listed at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time. There are very few 1 o'clock hour games or races this season. But we've got one here today down at Texas Motor Speedway. So what came out of last week that we might be able to expect? Well, I'll tell you right now. I mean, listen, it looked to me like everything was. Yeah, right there.
Everything's great.
I thought everything was great for Kyle Busch. I really did. And I was sitting pretty, even on my fantasy team. As a result thereof, I was looking good. But in the end, it had to turn out this way. We get one of the pesky boys in there again. Brad Keselowski.
You big dummy.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much. That was appropriately dropped. Brad Keselowski becomes the first of the two-time winners this season. Gets his first multiple race win. And clearly puts himself at the top of the leaderboard now at this point. But there goes one of those pesky ones. And we're going to have to see whether anybody else can, in fact, find themselves getting perhaps maybe a second win here today before we get a break on next week. Now, one of the things we had discussed at length last week was, well, how was stage racing going to operate at the small tracks? And so I'll be curious to hear from the rest of the crew here today, from the rest of the mechanics, exactly what their verdict was on how stage racing operated at a half mile there in Martinsville. Stage racing? Well, we were talking about Kyle Busch. I don't know. Perhaps maybe we don't want to ask Kyle how stage racing went. Things didn't go too well for him in stage 2. But frankly, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm sitting here with my M&M's racing shirt on today, and I would be the first one to tell Kyle, you're a fool. That was all your fault. We'll get into that one as well, as Kyle Busch and Ricky Stenhouse kind of got into it at the end of stage 2. Last week we took a look at the year of the young driver. Is this the year of the young driver? And so perhaps maybe I thought what we might do is on a rather regular basis, we'd add in a new segment. We take a look at where the young drivers are standing at this point and how the young drivers fared the previous week. So we'll check in on our young drivers from last week at Martinsville and what we might be able to expect from them this week in Texas. Interesting situation we've got going in Texas. I'm not quite sure how to read it. Could make for interesting racing today. Maybe not. Not so certain. Texas Motor Speedway went through a major repaving. I got to be honest, so far everything I've seen, everything I've heard has not been good. Start with the fact that Goodyear apparently wasn't prepared for it and apparently didn't bring along the best of tires. That led to a whole load of wrecks in practice. Yeah, I'm talking about practice. That's number one. Number two, a lot of drivers coming out saying, in fact, the repaving has absolutely ruined Texas. It's going to provide for a rather interesting, as I pointed out, situation today, as these drivers still continue to figure out what this new track is all going to be about and how it's going to operate. At the same time, while it could be interesting, it could also be just a wreck fest. We'll get the guys' opinions on that one in here this morning as well. And so, as I pointed out today, we are at Texas. We got race number 7, and we got Kevin Harvick sitting on the pole. We'll get into that. We'll get into the standings, where things stand with drivers. I'm still calling it a new season. We'll take a look at where things stand with fantasy, our fantasy teams, our fantasy league standings. Oh, and of course, then we've also got our winner's choice weekly challenge, and we'll take a look at where everybody stands on that one as well. It's actually gotten interesting. That's actually gotten rather competitive and seriously tight. I think the new points thing is actually making that really a little more compelling. All right, let's get the crew in here. Side draft, are you there, sidekick?
Everything's great.
I know it is. You're absolutely right. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, isn't it?
It is.
Now,
great day to go racing.
We hope. You know, I don't know what this repaving thing has done down there in Texas. We're going to wait and see. I actually didn't get a chance to see yesterday's race, so we'll find out whether. I mean, I know what the outcome was, but I didn't get a chance to actually see it to see whether. But boy, the day before the practice sessions were a mess, absolute mess. So, like I said, there was a lot of blame being placed on Goodyear. So, for not being prepared. Did you run the tape forward and backward, and you've got your notes all ready to go for today from Martinsville?
Yes, I do.
Okay, very good. Just checking. Just making sure there.
I have my trusty notepad is here with all my notes from last week's race. So we're good.
Everything's great. Good.
You know.
Everything's great. Yes. We're just gonna wear it out. You know that. Okay. Everything's great with Brandon.
No, I didn't do that. That was sidekick. Okay, I haven't dropped a single drop. I didn't even do the other one, surprisingly. But no, everything's fine. We're good to go here. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, I did watch a bit of the race yesterday, and I can kind of fill you in on how that works.
Good. Very good.
If you want, you know, you pointed out the track. There was definitely some track issues, but it seemed to get better as it went. So,
okay.
But we can talk about it.
And at least for this week, anyhow, we've got Christian Coley from onpitroad.com joining us as well. Welcome back in again, Christian. It's always a pleasure to have you. We're going to lose you for the next race. Is that right?
Next race, yes, you'll lose me because I'll be in Bristol for next weekend's race, and just freshly got back from Nashville about 3 a.m. last night. So,
wow. Yes, I saw that you were out and about yesterday. What were you covering yesterday? Was that the ARCA race?
Yeah, the ARCA race in at Fairground Speedway in Nashville. Very good race. One of the best ones I've seen in a good long while.
I noticed that on your social media. And then we'll figure out your schedule from that point. But for Bristol, anyhow, which will be in 2 weeks, folks, no race next week in recognition of the Easter holiday. So, Bristol will be in 2 weeks, so we'll be back on in 2 weeks, but without Christian. So we'll get into everything here from today for Martinsville and also for Texas. Well, I guess this made if anybody wants to jump in with us, please don't hesitate as well. Please, we'd love to have you. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us here at Fred House Sports' Race Stream Motorsports Hour. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, get over into our Blog Talk Radio chat room and you can leave us a message there. Or hit me up on Twitter at Fred House Mike. You can get me on Twitter at Fred House Mike. This probably made Sidekick pleased. Getting that pesky kid in there again. I really thought, I'll tell you, I'm trying not to jump the gun on the agenda here. It looked like for the longest time, it looked like it was going to be Kyle's race. I thought, okay, we're going to get a JGR. JGR is going to win. Finally, we're going to get a JGR in the winner's circle. As it turned out, Kyle Busch came in second. Brad Keselowski got first place last week. Chase Elliott came in third. Joey Logano came in fourth. Austin Dillon got a top five. Allmendinger, Bowyer, Newman, Kenseth, and Stenhouse were the rest of your lineup to the top ten. Comments, Sidekick, from your notes, what do you see there?
I'd have to say stage racing at Martinsville is a hit or a bump.
I thought it worked.
I thought it was great.
I thought it worked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, between the championship points and the stage racing, think it's really good. And if you need evidence or an argument for why stage racing is good to see, all you got to do is look at the last lap of the second stage.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've got a lap down car, you've got the leader trying to put a car down a lap, the fight that's going on over that position, and the fact that, the lap down driver, Stenhouse, came back and bumped the race leader out of the way to get his lap back and cost him the stage win.
Yeah.
So very exciting. So in an area of the race that typically is the nap zone in previous years, you've now got excitement going on. I kind of like it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, let's see here. Let's do this. I've got the audio of Keselowski's win. So let's get that, because I do have also the audio of those. And, you're saying it was the last lap, but I actually think there was a couple of laps involved in it where Busch and Stenhouse went back and forth. Busch and Stenhouse went back and forth right at the conclusion of stage two. I have the audio for that as well, which I'll get to here. In a couple of moments, but this was actually the Keselowski winning Martinsville audio.
But for Brad Keselowski, the white flag waves. One to go, sponsored by Credit One Bank. Back straight away, pulling down on Danica Patrick. Clear setting to the line. And in his 275th start, Brad Keselowski, Miller Lite, Team Penske, and Ford will go to victory lane at Martinsville. Eighth place, right side of the screen, right down to the wire. Newman prevails over Kenseth. It's Brad's
fifth. A lot of diamonds today. Awesome job, Brad. Great job on pit road today, guys. Nice solid day. That's all we needed.
Five straight top
fives. Thank you, everybody.
That's his longest streak. Second win of 17. First repeat winner of 2017 since his victory in Atlanta.
I thought that was actually pretty interesting. I didn't realize it until I actually heard the audio again there. Five straight top fives. I did not realize that. You know, some things get by you. You know, I do a weekly show and all, but still, that little kind of minutia stuff gets by me. That's pretty stinking impressive. Five top five finishes. The other thing that struck me about it was, as I'm listening to the audio again last night, as I was getting ready to do this program, I'm listening to the audio again of that. Mike Joy was less than, like, exuberant about the conclusion of that. I don't know if it was all sort of anticlimactic for him or what, but there have been other races where we've heard Mike, kind of doing a little more exclaiming at the end of a race. Not exactly the case here at Martinsville this past weekend. Brad Keselowski, as I point out, by virtue of the two wins, sits at the top of the leaderboard, not the leader, though, in points. Kyle Larson's still the leader in points. But if we were to rank everybody by win order, Keselowski's at the top. Kyle Larson falls in number two. Martin Truex, Ryan Newman, Kurt Busch. Then you get into the non-winners. And of the non-winners, Chase Elliott, Joey Logano, Kyle Busch, Ryan Blaney, and Clint Bowyer. All right, go around the room here, I guess, real quick. Brandon, thoughts on Martinsville and Keselowski's win and where things stand at this point?
Well, I agree with you, I think, from the standpoint of Kyle Busch in that stage, he pushed that too far. I think he should have left well enough alone. You know, he could have easily won that, you know, that segment without putting the car in risk, which I think is what he ended up doing. As far as Keselowski, I think
we're going to let you do that. We'll let you do that again.
I think we'll keep everybody on board with the, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to let you do that one again, Brandon. Do me a favor, pull your mic jack out and put it back in again. And we'll let you do that one all over again because that sounded like you were completely underwater. it was breaking up completely. We'll come back around here. Christian, what was your thought on Martinsville? Stage racing a success there for you or what?
I felt like it was a success to me. I think it proved basically what I've been saying the past few weeks is that the short tracks would definitely be the favorites with the stage racing, and I think it proved just that. I think one of my biggest problems I had with stage racing last weekend is it's not spread out wide enough in the stages because it seemed like we had one big giant stage in the end.
I think that's a good observation, guys. Anybody else?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's kind of like we didn't really need the stages because the fact that we only had like 100 laps with at least two stages, and it's like we got 400 left without them. And I was like, well, maybe we should split it up a little bit more.
Yeah. I think that's a great observation. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if we did see that modification coming. Obviously this is the first time going with this concept, and you know they're probably kind of putting their finger in the air to test the wind to figure out which way it's going to go. I think that's actually a pretty good observation. What do you think, Psychic? Spread out the stage laps a bit?
You know, I'm not quite sure
I'm trying to look back through my notes real quick to see if I can, if there's a pattern to it. But, you know, according to my notes here, you know, so last week at Martinsville, stage one and stage two were each 130 laps, with the final stage itself being 240 laps, making up the 500 lap race, which, you know, it's kind of tedious trying to count 500 laps. But unfortunately, when you're at a short track, you know, to get the mileage in, you do put in a lot of laps in that. Now I'm looking back, and I want to say it kind of, the breakdown looks to be, now Vegas was a little different. It looks like they're basically taking, you know, the final stage is approximately double the laps of the first and second stages. So it's almost kind of like they're, you know, breaking this thing into thirds,
more like quarters.
Two quarters and a half.
Two quarters and a half.
That's what I mean.
Yep.
So, you know, Auto Club with 60 laps and then an 80 lap. So that one was a little bit different. Let's see. Vegas was 80 and 107. So, and then Atlanta was 85 and 155. So.
Yeah, and at the larger tracks, it may work, but I think, I don't know, I still think Christian might be onto something with the shorter tracks. I mean, at one point during this race last week, I was, you know, as I was watching it, I was timing it, and I think Christian could probably speak to this better than even myself, because he's down there on the tracks frequently enough and can tell you probably from one track to the next about what the rotation is. But I was timing out the rotation. When they were going at I guess average speed of about 70, 75 miles an hour, I was averaging it out to about 3 laps a minute. So if you're coming in at, what did you say it was, Sidekick, 130? Was it 130 and 130 and then 240?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, you know, at 130, you would divide that by 3, and that's about how long that stage would last without any cautions at all, which would be what, about 45 minutes. And that seems, you know, that's probably the mathematics that they're operating on. And that sounds about right. 45 minutes a stage would probably be about the apt time. However, I kind of agree with you that what it does is it makes that final stage almost too long, doesn't it? And I don't know if that's where you were going, Christian. Maybe that's where you were going. That the final stage is that why you're thinking, is it because of the final stage, or is it that because you think the first two stages go by too quickly?
I felt like by the time we got to the final stage, I felt like we hadn't sat there and watched the two stages very long, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I just felt like it had not. I felt like it went by a lot quicker than it should have, and that final stage didn't go by as quick as I thought it should have.
Isn't it interesting how NASCAR's got us right in the mode, don't they? We're all sitting here analyzing it from the standpoint of, you know, fitting it into a box. Let's fit this stage into a box, and I mean, you know. That was the concept that you heard being bantered about when it was first proposed, that this would come out to be more like three heats in one race. That was the concept here. It would be like three mini races all in one race. And isn't that the way that we're kind of looking at it at this point? I don't know. Let's see. Brandon, did you want to try again with your – with your comments and your observations on this all? Or are you still having some issues? I saw he jumped off at one point.
Now, how much did you get before I went kind of?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay. All right. Well, long and short, I said I agree with you. I think Kyle Busch, you know, really messed up, you know, that whole stage. He shouldn't have pushed it. Should have left well enough alone and just taken his stage win and not fought so hard with Stenhouse. That was just dumb. But I like the stages. I think they worked well at Martinsville. I think they've worked well everywhere. And I don't know. I like the last stage being a little longer. I don't know if there's a better breakdown or not, but I do like that last stage having a little bit longer fight to it, because I'd like to see them get, you know, a couple pit cycles, you know, in that last, like, you know, set. And I think by having it like quarter, half, or whatever the formula works out to be, I think you end up with getting, you know, an extra, maybe even a green flag pit stop in, you know. It just depends on the track where, you know, I don't know. I kind of like having the last segment being a little bit longer. I don't know. Maybe it's just going to end up being everybody's personal opinion when it's all said and done.
Yeah, that's a great point too. It might just be, you know, there might not be any way to satisfy everybody at all.
Well, here it is. If you build in the first segment to essentially have one pit cycle, let's just call it, you know, the second segment to have at least one pit cycle. Now, this is all barring, no cautions, et cetera. I like to have that last segment to have a couple more pit stops. So you get the team aspect involved, you know, with getting the car off a pit road and not making a pit road, you know, mistake, not getting a, you know, speeding penalty, not, you know, jumping over the wall too soon, you know, all of it. I like having that. You know, and I think that last segment, you need to have more than just one shot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I'm at with that for now.
Well, good point. All right. Well, we've alluded to it a little bit, and that was, you know, what happened at the end of stage two. Kyle Busch leading. Stenhouse fearful that he might be lapped out. And that went back and forth with these two guys for at least a couple of laps, as I pointed out. At this point, you know, everybody's running at, like I said, about three laps a minute. This was the audio of the end of stage two, and I've got my opinions on it, which you'll hear immediately after. This was Kyle Busch and Ricky Stenhouse going back and forth, and then Kyle Busch ultimately losing out on what was absolutely positively, he had won stage two, but, well, doesn't win it in the end. This is how this went.
And everybody in front of Kyle Busch right now is a lead lap car. This is quite a fight here with four to go in stage two.
Well, and I think...
Oh, Hamlin moved Newman.
Yeah, well, he knows...
And it packs up even tighter.
18's coming, man. I got to go.
Oh, finally Kyle gets the outside. Look at Stenhouse going to run him wide. I mean, how bad does Kyle Busch want to put these cars a lap down, I think, is what Stenhouse is thinking.
Oh, Stenhouse got into him again. Are you kidding me?
It's easy for that to cut the left rear tire of Kyle Busch with that kind of contact.
Oh, Jimmy Hill way up high, and everybody is going to get by.
But, Mike, I told you earlier, guys will race you harder right now trying to stay on this lead lap.
Sure.
than I think they sometimes do for a win.
Look at Boyer trying to push his way past Hamlin. Newman right there. Dillon.
Pit road is closed.
And the leader right in the middle of it with two to go.
Red light.
I tell you, I'm watching.
Oh, look at the left rear on the 18. I just saw some smoke come off that left rear.
He's going to make it to the end of this stage, I think, but he does have some damage back there.
Saw a little bit of smoke come off the left rear of Kyle Busch as he came off turn two the last time.
All right, one more lap, and if he gets past Dillon, that's bad news for Stenhouse. Stenhouse would lose
again.
The free pass spot. It's going to be close.
I think he's going to be okay. There's not a lot of damage back there, but just enough. It's touching that left rear. But Stenhouse...
He moved him! Stenhouse moved him! Back on the lead lap.
And
here they come
change.
To the flag.
The
how about that? Whoa! Chase Elliott wins stage two.
What is it you don't like about stage racing?
Nothing.
I'll answer that. Exactly that. That's what I don't like about stage racing right there. And some people will look at me and go, are you crazy? No. It was unnecessary. Christian, I got to ask you because, again, you're down there. You're close to drivers constantly. You're close to crews. You're close to teams. Good strategy or bad strategy there on the part of Kyle Busch?
Well, I mean, this new format is made to promote hard racing all throughout the race, and that's what Kyle Busch is doing. I mean, I didn't expect Kyle Busch to just sit back and let everybody pass him. That was still in the lead lap. But I still feel Ricky Stenhouse kind of went too far, because at the time,
whoa,
Stenhouse would have got passed by Kyle Busch and would have been the last car in the lead, or would have been the first car lap down. And I kind of feel like he shouldn't have done that. But then again, maybe he viewed it that Kyle Busch, instead of getting 10 points last week, got 9 points in that segment.
Hmm.
And
now,
that's really going to affect the points here in a few weeks, especially without a playoff point.
All right. Now, that's an interesting slip up on it. You're saying Stenhouse went too far. I'm saying Kyle Busch went too far. That's my opinion. I think Kyle was completely out of line on this one. Sidekick, I have a feeling, Sidekick, you're going to come in on this and go, no, man, that's what stage racing's all about.
Well, the rules have changed. I can really see everybody's argument. I can see Kyle Busch's argument. I'm the race leader. I'm supposed to be giving respect. Somebody I'm putting a lap down shouldn't be racing me that hard. Shouldn't be bumping on me and everything else. Okay. I can understand that. But at the same time, I can understand Stenhouse, the flip side of that, saying, hey, we're at Martinsville. You're getting ready to put me a lap down. We're going to go, we're going to the end of the stage here, and I don't want to be a lap down starting out the third stage. I want to be on the lead lap, which puts me way farther up, especially at Martinsville, where you're on a short track and it's not the best, it's not the easiest to pass other cars.
Right.
Track position is premium. So I can totally see him, saying, hey, I'm fighting you for this spot. You're going to try and put me a lap down. I'm not going a lap down, And if you're going to race me a little hard to put me a lap down, well, I'm going to race you a little hard to not let you put me a lap down, especially with this caution getting ready to come out. Here's the thing, though. Ricky's now set a precedent saying, hey, I'm going to race, if I'm a lap down, I'm going to race you hard. So now, from now on, as Kyle Busch said in his post-race interview, race drivers are elephants. They don't forget. Ricky's now, when he's in that position and, he's trying to put somebody lap down, that person he's trying to put a lap down is going to race him just like he raced Kyle Busch. You have to race how you want to be raced.
See, I'm going to be honest with you. I take a bit more of a pragmatic view of it, and that is this. Kyle Busch, you're leading the stage. You've got it won, okay? That's like a prize fighter. That's like a prize fighter knowing he's got the fight won, but he's going, you know what? I want the knockout. That's what I want. And you know something? Sometimes that's just not smart. You got the win, all right? What's the difference whether Ricky Stenhouse is lapped out or Ricky Stenhouse is at the very end of the first lap, of the lead lap? What does that matter? What does it matter to you? There's going to be a caution. You're going to restart. He's going to be all the way in the rear. It doesn't matter. Leave it alone.
No, it absolutely matters, Mike, especially at Martinsville. The reason it matters is the more people you can lap and put laps down, the less people you have to race at the end of the race.
Well, all right, I hear you, because it's a short track. Right, I got you.
So, that's I honestly think that's what I think Kyle's thought was. Hey, I'm going to lap as many people as I can lap, knowing that when it comes down to the end of the race, you know, there might only be 15 people on the lead lap. So I only got to worry about 14 other cars. I mean, mm-hmm. sure, there's still 40 cars on the track. You still got to deal, you know, weaving through lap traffic and, you know, stuff like that. Don't get me wrong. But when you're thinking in your head, who's coming behind me? Who do I have to worry about? You know, you're only worrying about 14 other people versus, you know, 20 other people. You know, so, you know, and the other thing is, you know, that goes in with these stage wins is these stage points. That's why you know, the last couple laps of each stage are almost like a race finish because, you know, the top 10 get points.
Yeah. Do me a favor on that. Somebody here. I mean, psychic, it sounds like you know what you're talking about. I don't. I'm still not grabbing this whole concept of these stage points and how these are beneficial. And what's the other thing that we're talking about as well? Playoff points? Is that the same thing? I've got this. They've gone and convoluted this thing so greatly, in my opinion. You almost need a slide rule to figure out, you know, who's got what points in what, you know, at the end of a race. The bottom line is this, if I'm not mistaken, Kyle Busch would not have done what he did if it weren't for these extra points, right? That's the bottom line. Or is it? Because it seems to me he would have gotten them anyhow.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. I think he probably got caught trying to be a little too greedy.
Greedy. Yes. Thank you. That was the word I used last week.
You know what I mean? You know, I guess the easiest way to sum it up is he kind of lost focus of what he was going for. Instead of, you know, he got caught up in the old style of race, you know, the old style of NASCAR racing where, hey, I'm just trying to put people down as many laps down as I can put them so that I put myself in a good position. And he lost, you know, he lost focus on the fact that he was leading that stage and was going to get those precious playoff points, you know, the stage win points. And it cost him.
Okay, now somebody explain this to me.
I think the long and short of it is Kyle Busch just needed to find a better balance between putting as many cars down as he could and not putting himself in a situation where he might, you know, either wreck the car or lose spots. And I think he just, as Sidekick said, I think he just got too possessed on trying to put Stenhouse down and didn't think that, hey, okay, maybe I let him go. I'll just take my 10 bonus points, you know, from winning the stage and move on. Because that's the way it works. 10 mm-hmm. through 1 through 10 get 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, et cetera, extra points that get added to their point total at the end of the race.
Okay.
So that's what the stages are for. So essentially, you could end up winning two stages. You have 20 bonus points. You could get the most points leaving that track and not even win the race, depending on who, you know, how everybody else finished in the stages, who wins the race, et cetera. So that's why the points are more important. You know, the stage points are important.
Okay. Now,
and they're fighting for that. And there's probably, even though NASCAR doesn't announce payouts anymore, I would bet there's probably bonus money that they're getting paid for winning the stage. Probably.
Hmm. What are – okay, all right. So that explains stage points. What are playoff points?
Yeah,
all
that
right,
part
now,
I'm not sure.
Playoff points. Okay, so the playoff points. Each stage winner will receive one playoff point. So there's actually
–
So
that pads
the
first round. Yeah, it pads their first round of elimination.
Now, that's what I thought. I thought it was only the first round. It actually carries through the whole thing.
Don't they do the reset anymore then?
They do the reset, but you keep your bonus points.
Oh, okay.
Your playoff points.
Yes. Those playoff bonus points.
Okay.
They transfer round to round.
Okay. All right.
See, I thought it was, I was under the understanding, as Brandon was, that they only were first round. But listening to the past couple race broadcasts, they've said that it carries through to each round.
Isn't this great? We here it is. We're going into race seven. We still don't exactly know what the rules are.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. I think NASCAR and the broadcast teams ought to do a better job at explaining what's going on now, and I think you get more people involved. That may be part of the ratings issue. Is not everybody totally understands exactly what's happening
this
right now.
Exactly. Now, if I understand what everybody has just said here, and correct me now if I'm wrong, but based upon the formula that you're talking about, Kyle Busch went from winning that stage and potentially getting 10 points, 10 stage points, plus one playoff point, which would be a total of 11. He went from that to finishing this stage in ninth place in the stage and only getting 2 points. So this actually cost him 9 points. Would that be accurate?
No. I thought he finished second in the stage.
No, he finished second in the stage. So he basically lost the playoff point and he lost one actual race point.
All right. That's stage position. They're not showing stage point. Oh, okay. I'm looking at the official report from NASCAR. And can I tell you, even the official report, in my opinion, is deceptive. Because everything else on the official report in NASCAR is listed in points. But when it comes to stage one and stage two, they're showing the position that the person came in. You understand what I'm saying?
What's next to Kyle's name in the official report?
On the official report, Kyle reads stage one, three, stage two, two.
Okay.
Total points is the next column, 52, all right? And then playoff points, which is the final column in the official report. Next to Kyle's name, there's nothing, but next to Brad Keselowski, it reads 5. So everything else is points, but in the official report, they're showing position. That's why I was reading that.
What is the show for playoff points for Truex? Didn't Truex win that stage instead of Kyle?
Truex got one.
Okay, so that's the point. Truex's point is the point Kyle lost for a playoff point.
No.
That was Chase Elliott.
Yeah,
that
Chase Elliott edged out. Right. Yeah, when Stenhouse bumped Busch, that allowed Stenhouse and Elliott to pass.
Yeah.
So Elliott took the lead.
Okay.
The stage one leadway.
Truex won stage one. And Chase Elliott won stage two. But my point is this. If you were to read the official report to me as I'm reading it, because they've got this listed where everything is points, but the only things that are position are the stages, to me, like Chase Elliott came in 10th, Kyle Busch came in 9th, Brad Keselowski came in 8th. That's what it looks like. Because if you're going by, it's backward. They ought to change the stage columns to stage points. That's what they ought to do. Because everything else on the official report is points. I don't know.
Now, here's something interesting.
Now maybe some people would say, Mike, you are really being picky. Go ahead.
But that's what Mike does.
Yeah, I know.
He picks things apart. So let's go back to the what was the race that Truex won?
Did he win Atlanta? Was that Atlanta?
Vegas.
Okay.
So that was the race that he ran the gauntlet. He picked up the stage one, stage two, and won the race. He got 7 bonus points.
Mm-hmm.
Playoff points from that race because he dominated that race.
Right.
Because you pick up one first stage, and then it was 3 bonus points in previous years. This year it's 5. So looking at postseason, right now, I don't know how many other points he has, but just out of Vegas alone, he's got 7 bonus points.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing about the playoff points, the thing about these playoff points is that while we can sit here and say, well, okay, this is what's going, you won't actually see them in action until we get to the chase. You don't know really what their impact is going to be. We can sit here and say, oh, wow, he got seven playoff points at Las Vegas back in race number 3. But we don't know really what impact going to be until we get into the chase. That's the whole thing. So you kind of have to wait on that.
Don't talk about playoffs.
Yeah,
you kidding me? Playoffs? I hope we can win a game.
Yeah, look at here. Fred Housemaker is already talking about, the middle of September in playoffs. Well, it's better than talking about practice. Practice? Let's talk about practice. Yeah. We'll talk about practice here. We'll talk about practice here in a second. All right. Anyhow, we're not going to – well, we've gone round and round about this. There are people out there with their eyes glassed over going, Fred Housemaker, will you leave it the hell alone already?
There seems to be no sign of intelligent life anyway.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Wow. That was – wow. Boy, do I feel put down.
Well, no, you said that the people listening were glossing over. That was more a dig at people listening, I think.
I think that's more of a hit at the host. All right, we talked a little bit about the young drivers last week, and so I thought perhaps maybe what we do come back, take a look at the young drivers, because there were a couple of young drivers I thought that did fairly well. I'll throw one out there right up at the top, and that's Austin Dillon. 5th place finish last week, came in 9th in stage 1. But let me make sure I'm right about that, since I didn't read the report correctly. No, I guess I did read that correctly. Okay, good. 9th in stage 1, ended up the race with 34 points. Chase Elliott up there again at the very top. Third place finish for him. He was the stage 2 winner, as we just mentioned. Led 20 laps and had ended up the race with 50 points. Rookie Eric Jones, 12th place finish. 8th in stage 2 and 28 points. Blaney this past weekend, 25th place finish, 7th in stage 1, 5th in stage 2, only ending up the race with 22 points.
And no longer allowed over to Junior's house to drink beer.
At all. That's right. That's right.
If you listen to his radio communication.
So, coming out of that, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm right back at it again. I'm still saying, look for Austin Dillon. Look for Ryan Blaney. And I'll pull a Brandon here. I might actually be giving myself a little bit away here today on who my pick will be, but look for Blaney sooner than later. Look for Blaney to get a win. Look for Austin Dillon, I predict, to get a win here shortly. Those are the two that I would concentrate on. Daniel Suarez still seemingly struggling, 32nd place finish, and only 5 points for the entire race. That was last week. We talked about the Suarez thing. More and more, it really does appear that it's looking like, this is a kid that was just brought up too soon. There's no explaining this. Look, I know JGR has been having some trouble. I wouldn't even say they're having trouble. God knows what the issue is. I think it's just a matter of, The other teams have caught up to him. Last year, they were just so far head and shoulders above everybody else. Everybody else just caught up to him. So it may not be a situation where JGR has any issues at all. It may just be an issue where the other teams have caught up. But Suarez, this doesn't seem to make any sense that this kid Suarez can't be performing a little bit better than this. I mean, for God's sake, when Kyle Larson came up in his rookie season, he was finishing better than what we've seen here. Chase Elliott was finishing better than here. And I would think you have to say that Suarez has got just as good of equipment as Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson did. In fact, I would argue that Suarez has got better equipment than Kyle Larson did in Kyle Larson's rookie season. So, anyhow, thoughts on the young drivers, thoughts on anything I brought up, anybody? Go ahead, throw him in there.
Well, I think they're all doing good, as you pointed out. I don't think any of them are – they're all starting to shine. I think they all have areas they need to work on. But and I think they're doing it. I think they're slowly coming around. I think Austin Dillon's probably going to get close to winning a race, as you said. I'm Ryan Blaney is just dying to win a race, you know, at this point. who does it first between them two, really? That's kind of the way I see it. As far as the young guys go, I think Chase Elliott, obviously, I think he's just a little bit more polished around the edges than the others for some reason. I don't know if it's just the way, you know, his history, his family, you know, the way his dad brought him through racing. But he just seems a little, I don't know, better prepared for it, let's just say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And we've talked about that before. Christian, I know you've got your favorites on the young drivers list. What do you make of the whole young driver situation where some of these stand? We've thrown a couple of names out there. Of the young drivers, who do you think gets the win first, I guess, basically?
You know, I'm really looking at Austin Dillon today in Texas. But I'm really looking at a young gun that has a win, that won last week, and I'm looking at Chris Buescher. He led one of the practices this weekend, and I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to go for the win today. I'm also kind of looking at Chase Elliott today. I mean, you know, the guy is the leader in points without the wins, and I feel like that's got to be shown on the track, and I think it will be today or sometime in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Sidekick, thoughts on the youngsters? What about Suarez? I mean, anybody want to? I mean, you know, I know we've talked about it already this season. You know, perhaps maybe he was brought up too soon. I don't know. Is Suarez just not ready?
I don't know if it's that he wasn't ready or. I think JGR wasn't ready. You know what I mean? There's obviously something amiss over there with that team.
Is it really, or is it more of what I just said before, which is that they just had a phenomenal season last year, and everybody else has just caught up with them?
No, I mean, in Suarez's case, I just think they're a little bit behind the eight ball there because, you know, with the sudden, you know, Carl Edwards announcement about him, retiring, and then, you know, who are we going to bring up? Well, we're going to bring up, you know, Suarez. It was kind of mentioned late. He might not have had a mindset for was, you know, preparing to really come up. And then, you know, his crew chief taking an indefinite leave here, they announced it before last week's race, right?
Right.
So that would have been, you know, five races in. And, you know, we don't know why he took the indefinite leave. And we don't know if whatever is going on was impacting him being a crew chief for the first five races.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So they're
right.
You know,
that's a good point.
There's just a lot of things up in the air with the with that whole team, and I'm just thinking that maybe because of all of that, that's why they're potentially not racing racing as well as we thought he should be. Also it might be he had big shoes to fill. He's filling in for Carl Edwards. So you almost expect that he's supposed to come out and perform. Now JGR as a whole, they do seem to be a little bit behind the eight ball again. And I don't know. not quite sure if it's just a normal yearly ebb and flow that we've discussed, or what do you call it?
I think it could be a little bit of what you started there with Carl Edwards. I think Carl Edwards might have been the voice of reason among the drivers of JGR. You got Kyle, who's a bit of a hothead. Denny, who's a bit of a hothead. Matt Kenseth doesn't strike me as the leader of anything. So now you got a rudderless ship there with, a rookie. Well, I picture Matt Kenseth. Well, he sits in the back of the room skulking, That's just the way I picture him, in the meeting. I see Kyle and Denny getting ready to, throw fists, and Carl's up the one, okay, let's, everybody calm down. He's like the referee, voice of reason. And I think, you took that away, and now your dynamic is all, askew.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way I would, view it. I mean, because Kenseth, to me, does not strike me as, I don't know. I don't even know how he survived in NASCAR so long, to be honest. I know he's won a championship. I just he always has something to whine, piss, bitch, and moan about, It's like, throw a set.
Oh, dear God.
But anyway, sorry.
I'm going to be honest with you. And being the JGR guy and fan that I am, I've just kind of looked at this season and said, you know what? Everybody will get their act together. I'm not worried about it. I mean, I'm not sure about Suarez. Can I tell you honestly, to me, Suarez is a lost leader this year. That's the way I look at Suarez. And I think that's the way JGR ought to look at it as well for this season. Daniel Suarez is a lost leader, all right?
Yeah, you're probably right.
You leave that one alone, all right? As far as the other three go, I've kind of looked at this season and said, you know what? Last year was so phenomenal that everybody else just caught up. And, it goes back to what you talked about, Brandon, through a lot of last season and through the beginning part of this season, SHR moving over to Fords, that may have had an impact of some nature. So who knows? Ford obviously is putting more into this. We've seen the results from the Penske crew. Blaney's having a good season. So, obviously the Fords are on the move. That may just be in response simply to the fact that Toyota Racing has been, was at the top for all of last season. And, so that's kind of the way I've looked at it. But anyhow, all right. I want to bring this up because it's been on the agenda now here for a couple of weeks. And I want to get some thoughts on it because I've got my own on it. It was announced actually a couple of weeks ago now. NASCAR released specifications for the use of restrictor plates in the Xfinity Series race at Indianapolis Motor Speedway in July. There are currently no plans, the series said, to use them in an eventual Brickyard 400, which would be the Monster Series. Specifications for the July 22nd Xfinity Series race are use of a taller spoiler and wider splitter, incorporation of aeroducts, which move air out of the front wheel wells, and use of a 7/8-inch restrictor plate. Let me go to Sidekick first. Sidekick, what are your thoughts on restrictor plate racing coming to Indy?
I hate it.
So do I.
I think it's completely stupid. You know, you're going to go and add a restrictor plate, add more downforce to the car, and make the car so that they can't pass each other. I absolutely hate this idea and think it's going to fail miserably. I'm just glad that they're testing it with the Xfinity series, and I'm hoping it's a complete bomb so that they don't implement it at the cup level.
Let me get Christian in here. Christian, have you heard anything about this in your travels? What's the thinking
on
this?
What was the motivation?
What was the motivation?
The motivation was pretty much in the case where last year's Xfinity race sucked. There was no passing for the lead. And some brilliant person in NASCAR thought that a restricted plate would help this. I say that it's not a really good move. But the problem is, you can't really make what we saw last year at Indianapolis any worse than it already was. And you're not going to, in my opinion, and as I told one of my friends a couple of months ago when they first started talking about it, was if they moved the Xfinity race from Indianapolis, we're not going to lose very many fans, because if we just take it to IRP, we'll gain a lot more fans.
Well, oh boy. Yeah, but... isn't it kind of a tradition? I don't know. Now I hate to sound old school.
It's a tradition for IndyCar to race there.
I know.
They used to race Xfinity at IRP, which is Indianapolis Raceway Park, which is a shorter track. So that's always been the case. That's not that would be, you know, going back to what they used to do. They never really raced Xfinity on Indy till what? How long has it been, Christian? 2 years?
2013, I think, is first year.
Right, is that right?
Is the fourth year then. Yeah. Yeah, they always ran at Indianapolis Raceway Park. It's a shorter track.
So it's only 4 years that they've been here at wow.
Yeah, they would run the same weekend as Cup, but they would run on different tracks.
Oh. Well, that's bad on my part for not knowing that. I should have known that, for God's sakes.
I'll be honest with you. I've never been impressed with Indy as a stock car racetrack. I don't know. The track itself I don't think lends itself greatly to stock cars. You know, it works great. It's a great Indy car track. Stock cars, I think that, you know, there's the groove is in such a way that it's a little tough to pass sometimes. It can be inherently hard to put a 3,500 pound race car, you know, with tires around that track without the banking the way it is at the speed that's at. I think it's very difficult for Goodyear to come up with a tire that you know, that works for this track with this type of car. And I think that's why you see what you see. I mean, IndyCars have bigger tires than half the weight, or probably even less than half the weight of a stock car. So, you know what I mean? You got a better dynamic, you know, to deal with, you know, for, you know, scrubbing the speed when you're going into them corners. And I think that's always been an issue for stock cars, really. But that's just my opinion.
I'm trying to... now, what was this... I feel foolish here. What was the size of IRP?
I know it's at least a... It's less than a mile. I know that. I don't know if it's... a mile or three quarters of a mile? I don't know. Christian, can you?
Okay.
The
oval.
Shorter track.
Yeah.
The oval is saying it's three quarters of a mile.
Okay, there you go.
Three quarters of a mile, and you know, well, I should know this too. We drag race there. NHRA drag races there at Indy, so the drag strip is there as well. But three quarters of a mile versus what is Indianapolis? A 2 mile?
Yes.
Too long.
2 mile.
Too long. Yeah, too long. Okay, I got you. All right. Well, yeah. All right. I like Indy. I like the big track. But that's me. I'm always kind of prefer the bigger tracks anyhow, but All right, I hear what you guys are saying, you know. You think the attendance would be better, huh, Christian?
I do think it'd be better.
All right. All right, so it sounds like we're all kind of in agreement. No, if we're going to stay at Indy, no restrictor plate. That's one thing we know. No restrictor plate there. All right. One of the things I wanted to bring up real quick, and then we'll get into talking a little bit about what we can expect here today at Texas. Brandon, you saw the article, I would imagine, about what Junior is going to be driving at Pocono this season, right?
Yeah, I saw that. I thought it was kind of odd, honestly, but hey, whatever.
What? I didn't get it at all. I do not get that. That doesn't make any sense to me.
It almost seems like the Philadelphia Eagles are a sponsor on that race car.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
For anybody that doesn't know, it was revealed this past week. Dale Jr.'s number 88. He will be flying around at Pocono, of course, right here in Pennsylvania, not far from Philadelphia. He will be flying around Pocono. I guess this will be the first race. In fact, I know it's the first race, which will be when? In June? July, actually. Am I right? No, it's June. It's the June race, June 11th. He will be flying around Pocono in a number 88 with a Philadelphia Eagles paint scheme. Now, it's well known.
Oh, no!
That, it's well known. Listen, for me, all I can say is
everything's great.
Yeah, it's well known that Junior is a Redskins fan and a big Redskins fan, which is kind of odd unto itself that here he is not just racing around with another team, but it's another competitor team. It's a team inside the very division of the team that he is. A loyal fan of. I haven't quite been able to figure out why the hell the Eagles have their logo all over this car. I do not get it. And as you point out, Brandon, that's the only thing, you know, when you look at it, you think to yourself, seriously, are the Philadelphia Eagles actually taking out the sponsorship on this car? That's because that's the way it appears. But I don't know. Sidekick, do you have any insight on this?
I think it's kind of great. I think that Philadelphia Eagles are trolling the Redskins. You know, what better way to kind of mess with the Redskins than to take one of the, basically sponsor a car of one of their biggest known fans and, you know, basically paying him. And, you know, he's not going to decline it because he's got, you know, they got to pay the race team's got to pay the bills. So it's not like they're going to say, well, no, sorry, Junior's a Redskins fan. We're not going to let you, you know, can we put you on a different car? You know? So I think it's great.
Let's see. The Philadelphia Eagles were tweeting about it apparently this past week. Hey, Dale Jr., this came direct from the Eagles, the Philadelphia Eagles team Twitter account. Hey, Dale Jr., Eagles green looks pretty good on your car. Fly, Eagles, fly. Now, that sounds
like they didn't know about it.
Yeah, but that sounds like they didn't know about it.
No, they knew about it.
I guess they had to. I don't know.
Well, think about it. It only makes sense. Pocono's pretty close. You know,
well,
it's a close track. They had to be prearranged.
Yeah. You know, and it's right. You know, when does training camp start?
Well, training camp doesn't normally start until mid July.
Yeah. So.
So you know
that's
the closest. You know, probably the closest Pocono race to when training camp starts. Training camp is up kind of near that area. So it's probably an expensive way to, you know, try and troll the Redskins, but at the same time, you know, what of all the if you're trying to get the most publicity out of it, why not pick the most popular driver in NASCAR?
Well,
I'd be a Redskins fan.
That's a good point.
You know?
That's a good point.
You know, Junior's got, what, two million something, you know, some crazy amount of followers on Twitter. You know,
Anybody have a clue what it costs to sponsor a car for 1 week? Particularly one of the bigger named cars. I mean, you know, the 88 is probably, well, as you're pointing out, Psychic, they can probably ask whatever they want as far as sponsorship for that car. What do you think it cost the Eagles to sponsor that car for 1 week, if in fact it was the Eagles?
I don't know. Christian might have an idea. Maybe. I don't know.
I know Dale Earnhardt Jr. is probably the most expensive sponsorship in the whole NASCAR.
There you go.
But I don't know the exact number, but I know it's got to be expensive.
So what? I mean,
it's expensive.
Wow.
It's expensive enough to look at Nationwide, and you could see that Nationwide had to leave the entitlement sponsorship of a series to sponsor Dale Jr. So that kind of tells you how much it costs.
Did you find a number, Psychic?
I found an article on Business Insider where they're quoting Adweek, where they're saying for a single race to be the primary sponsor and have the car basically mainly done up in your company's logo or paint scheme or whatever can cost upwards of $35 million.
Whoa! Whoa!
That's for the whole season. That's the whole
it's
season.
It's saying a single race on this article.
No, that's not correct.
Of course, now I got an ad block thing coming up.
I was going to say $2 million. That's my guess. My guess is the Eagles dropped $2 million to throw green up all over that car. That's my guess.
My guess is it's not even that high. I'm guessing
really?
It's probably around $1 million for a single one-off deal. For a single one-off race deal, that's probably around $1 million.
All right. At 35, holy smokes. Dear God.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I misread it.
Dear Lord.
That is, yeah, that is for the full season.
I was gonna say that's more than they're paying. That's well more than they're paying Carson Wentz. Oh, all right. Anyhow, we're heading to Texas. Hey, the storyline today, guys, apparently is this repaving. So, Sidekick, talk to us, or Brandon, talk to us. You said you saw a little bit of the race yesterday. We know from Friday things were a real mess from the standpoint of cars finding their way into the wall. And apparently this was all a grip issue. A lot of drivers putting the blame, a lot of observers putting the blame on the repaving job that Texas did. The fact that there was no testing of the track. There was no tire testing of the new repave job, which
here's
a little unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think the problem was the timing. They should have planned it better, you know, in between events. Here's the long and short of it. They removed some of the banking in turns one and two. Turns one and two basically was a one groove turn to start the race. As the race progressed, the Xfinity cars moved the line up a little bit and managed to get almost a two groove track. They spun out. They had a lot of incidents early in the race, but it got better as it went. There was also some talk that the track could have done more with, you know, bringing that machine that runs the tires the wrong way on the track to put some rubber into it and help cure, you know, the racing line. And I believe I even heard during the broadcast that one was on the way, that they were going to try to work on it before the Cup race today. One of those machines that drags tires the opposite way around the track.
Is
so,
that where we saw that? We saw that being used at which track?
I don't remember which one. We've seen it a couple times. It's pretty standard to help cure in a new surface. So
right.
And I think that's just the long and short of it. Now, will today's race be affected? Maybe in the beginning, But I think as this race goes on, it'll be better. It's different in the sense that, you know, the one turns three and four are the same as it always been, but track turns one and two is entirely different. So now they got to kind of do what they do at Darlington, where they kind of have to have a happy middle. They have to set up for, you know, two completely different style turns. And, you know, it's going to take some getting used to, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's for sure.
Do we know whether, and I don't know, Christine, you might have some insight or maybe you know something on this one. Do we know whether, I mean, there were complaints that Goodyear wasn't prepared for it. Has Goodyear had any time at all, perhaps maybe since Friday, to address this and bring a different issue of tire in?
I don't think they had enough time to do that.
Okay.
Even this weekend, they would have had to develop a completely new tire. That kind of can't be done in such short notice. That was a big problem without having the Goodyear tire test or a test at all, period. And that's why I feel today would probably be a wreck fest.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from a lot of people. There are a lot of people out there that think today could be a real absolute mess.
I think possibly in the beginning, but I think as the race goes on, it'll settle. That's just my just based on the Xfinity race yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Any observations?
And, you know, you may have a little less too, because you know you are dealing with the best drivers in the world now.
Yeah. Any observations on this, Psychic?
Well, I thought it was. I watched qualifying, and so that I.
Wow.
The beginning of this race is going to be very, very interesting, because you had about a third of the field, maybe, that did not even get past inspection to get out on the track to qualify.
Yep. Yep. That was another issue.
You know, so you're going to have these guys at the back that, you know, practiced and didn't qualify. You know, Kyle Larson. I think Kyle Busch did get out on track to qualify. But Dale Jr. Is in the back. And
Kyle Larson.
So, yep, Kyle Larson's in the back. So you got some guys that are going to be trying to make up positions quickly in the beginning of the race. And you're going to be on, you know, a track that, you know, has some rubber down. You know, from the Xfinity race and that, but you know, it's, you know, they're going to have to kind of get more rubber down on the track. So, you know, you may see what similar to the Xfinity race where you had guys in the beginning have some problems. You know, added to that, the fact that you got 40 cars, you know, all tightly together at the beginning of the race. So, I think we're going to have an interesting start to the race. Jimmy Johnson spun in practice and was able to, or in qualifying. He was coming around. He had finished his first lap. He was going to run a second one. And, you know, Chad came on and said, "Hey, you did okay. Don't worry about the second lap." You know, so Jimmy dumped the throttle and the back end of the car went around and he went for a nice good spin. I'm not sure where he's going to be lining up.
24th.
Okay. So they're putting him ahead of the people that didn't qualify. Because basically he flat spotted three of the four tires. So he had to replace, you know, they had to put new tires on, which puts him, you know, is a modification, puts him to the back of the pack. And there was some discussion about whether or not he would go to the back as in 40th or to the back of the cars that qualified,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then those that didn't qualify would start behind him. So, okay. So he's starting 24th. Okay.
Psychic, thank you for bringing that up. Just a little bit of an aside here, guys. first time, this today is the first time since Daytona that we're seeing a full 40-car roster. This is today. It's the first time. Which I like to point that out. I don't know why. I find that sort of stat somewhat interesting. And talking about that Jimmy Johnson qualifying, go ahead.
I was going to say, part of it might be, now I know that, you know, J.J. Yaley is the, you know, they're running a limited schedule this year. I'm wondering if part of the reason was that West Coast swing that's such a logistical nightmare for teams. I'm wondering if that's why we saw a couple races where we didn't have a full 40 field.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I'm going to keep my eye on it. You can bet that. I always, for some reason or another, that's always something I'm keeping my eye on. That always seems to be something that draws my attention, even in NHRA, when we're not fielding a full field. So you can bet I'll be on top of it and watch it. I mean, we have had a couple of races back here, you know, somewhat east since the season began. I mean, Atlanta was week two. Martinsville was last week. Martinsville, I believe we had 38. Now, you know, I hear what you're saying. Some people would come back to me and go, well, Mike, Martinsville is Martinsville. I mean, it's a half mile. So maybe there are some people that just don't want to get, you know, they don't want to get involved in that mess. I don't know. I'll keep my eye on it. You talk about the qualifying, you know, and I appreciate you bringing up that Johnson thing, too, because Jimmy, when you see the video on that, Sidekick, that car was all over the place in that qualifying run. And we're talking about qualifying run, for God's sake. That car was all over the place.
Qualifying?
Jimmy Johnson's car.
We're talking about qualifying.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I couldn't get over how that car was just – that car looked like it had a freaking mind of its own. Like it didn't even have – like, yeah. It, you know, there was no steering capability to it the way that car was moving. And Kyle's didn't look much better on Friday, but Jimmy Johnson's boy, that was really strange looking. I'll be honest with you. Kevin Harvick. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, you know what was crazy watching qualifying? They're going into turn three. They're hitting 206 miles an hour. Going into that corner. I mean, the speeds are ridiculous.
And we're putting restrictor plates on Indy, huh?
Yeah.
I like Texas. I like this track. That's why, in some respects, when I was reading all the nonsense about the repave on Friday, I'm like, oh, damn. Because I enjoy this Texas race, and I like the larger tracks, this is the race I've always kind of enjoyed a little bit more than some of the others. But let's take a look at where we are here today, real quick. Hey guys, Fords are on parade, huh? We got five Fords at the top of qualifying today. Harvick on the pole, Ryan Blaney number two, Clint Bowyer number three, Joey Logano is four, Brad Keselowski's five, all Fords. Yeah, didn't I bring up, the Fords have just caught up with the Toyotas. I think I was mentioning that earlier. Jamie McMurray comes in at seven, McMurray six, Truex seven, Kenseth eight, Ryan Newman, 9. Kurt Busch, 10. There's your top 10.
Somebody told me who's starting 13th.
Run that by me again. I'm sorry.
Who's starting in 13th?
Michael McDowell.
Yeah.
Yeah. you're right. I mean, that's – but today's, as was pointed out, today's qualifying is a little bit mixed up from what we're, you know, accustomed to, simply because of all the problems they had in getting these guys through inspection. I mean, you know, you got a lot of guys coming out of the coming out from behind that you know you wouldn't normally expect to be coming from that far deep. But anyhow, no, we'll see how things go. I mean, you know, I'm just looking at the lineup here for today. Interestingly, where the hell is, you know, because I was bringing up Austin Dillon. Where the hell is Austin Dillon coming out of? What position? Because I see Ty Dillon's coming out of 14 right behind.
24th, I think.
Wow.
I mean, 25th.
Wow. So Ty actually has a better qualifying position. Ty Dillon coming out at 14. Austin Dillon coming out at 25. So, All right. Anyhow, Texas. We've
coming out at 25.
Well, was he another victim of the inspection thing?
No, he was not. He just they made a run late in that first round, and somebody else came out and put them out of the top 25, and it was already or 24, and it was already too late for them to go back out and try for another lap.
Okay. Yeah, I was just thinking that only 24 people qualified, but that's right. Yeah, you're right. They only the first round they take
30...
the top 24. Yeah, you're right. Okay. I thought there was only 24 that had qualified. That's why I'm sitting here going, wait, what? Hold on.
No, I think there's like 30 cars that qualified. 31, I think, or 33.
Well,
one of those.
All right, so as I point out, we got all these Fords up at the top, and interesting article I read I guess it was just yesterday. You know, there's been a lot made about Hendrick and their slow start. Of course, you know, there's been a lot made about JGR as well, but Jimmy Johnson, who you know. You know, there's been so much talk, you know, eight time. But Jimmy Johnson going into this one, and because we talked about it, I mean, where his start position is, looking at the underdog status again, seventh week in a row, looking at the underdog status. You know, hey, how unusual all of that is for Jimmy Johnson. So. I don't know. Well, listen, I'm going to be honest with you. I was tempted to put Jimmy Johnson on my fantasy team, but all right. Anyhow, talking fantasy for a moment, let's get to a little bit of fantasy chit chat here. Give you a rundown on our own league at this point. We don't have any two-time winners. Brad Keselowski was a two-time winner last week for real, but we don't have any two-time winners yet in our fantasy league. The Little Beast still sits up at number one. Texas Ham came from all the way at number 18 to number two this week on our overall leaderboard in fantasy, all the way to number two with a win. Number three, Texas Thunder Down Under. Number four is too hot to handle, and I'm coming in at number five. So, Sidekick, interestingly, we've talked about the repaving. This is a tough one to kind of figure out. We don't have much of a history, at least from active drivers, not much of a history. Jimmy Johnson has won here six times, but as I pointed out, kind of coming from an underdog role today. And then everybody else that's active, only two wins each. Kyle Busch, Matt Kenseth, and Denny Hamlin. So it's not like you can even rely upon, repeat, you know, winners at this track. It looks like you got to be looking at some new roster moves. That's what it would seem to me. I know I did. Go ahead.
Well, not that much.
Really?
Yeah, last week was I made two moves, only two moves in that. So this week I'm looking at I'm staying with Brad Keselowski. The Fords are going to be on parade. I subbed out I subbed out Martin Truex and put in Kevin Harvick. He won all three stages of the qualifying and that, and is sitting on the pole. I think he's looking really, really strong in Texas. Matt DiBenedetto is still on there. I subbed out Kyle Larson and put in Chase Elliott. The fact that he qualified, or, you know, basically he didn't qualify. So he's starting at the back of the pack. And I think he's going to get some good points. And then Landon Castle is still on the roster from last week. I'm going with Kevin Harvick as my winner and Ford for manufacturer.
All righty. Now, if we go over and take a look at our little weekly challenge, our what we call our Eat My Dust Winner's Picks challenge that we've been doing every single week. NASCAR John leads all at 249. This has actually gotten quite competitive. NASCAR John leads all at 249. Brandon, you're coming in just 10 points behind at 239. Sidekick, you're then 5 points behind that at 234. Christian, you and I are tied at fourth at 187 each, and then loyal listener Liz coming in at 165. I can tell you that NASCAR John is going with Kevin Harvick. Brandon, where are you heading?
Well, I'm going to go with Kevin Harvick's teammate in that Clint Bowyer. I like the way he started off driving for Tony. In the 14 car, he's seems like he's on a momentum upswing, in my opinion. So, Fords look pretty good here, look pretty good all year. I just have a feeling I'm going to go with Clint Bowyer.
All right. Clint Bowyer and Sidekick.
Looks like NASCAR John and I are picking same drivers again.
Going with
Kevin Harvick.
Harvick. Christian.
I'm going to go with my normal wild card, and I'm going to pick Chris Buescher to win today.
Chris Buescher. I'm going with Ryan Blaney. And loyal listener Liz is going with Clint Bowyer as well. All right? So we got a bunch of B's. We got a bunch of B's on the list there. All right, there you go. That's our program for today. Race Train Motorsports Hour will be back here with you in 2 weeks. We get a week off next week in recognition of the Easter holiday. So we will be back here with you on, let's see, what will the date be? It'll be April 23rd. All right. But we do have programs that are rocking and rolling all this week. So make sure you're tuning into us on Thursday night to our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show. 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. You can catch that one Saturday night. And then I'll be back here with you next Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. for another relaxed Frat House Saturday. Christian, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your time. On pitroad.com, get over there and check out everything that they're doing over there and all of Christian's contributions. You'll be making some big ones next week, obviously. Where are you heading next week?
We're heading to Bristol in 2 weeks. 2 weeks.
2 weeks, rather. Yeah, 2 weeks, not next week. 2 weeks. All right.
We're heading to Thunder Valley.
And we will, we'll catch up and we'll figure out when we get Christian back in here again. In the meantime, for everybody else out there, you got a lot of sports to pick from this afternoon. But more importantly, you got a big race coming up here in not that long from now, just about an hour or so from what I understand, Texas Motor Speedway. So get out there and enjoy your racing.